재미와 지식의 오디오라이프 팝빵.
We start International News Digest with this important trade deal. There's been an anti-trade sentiment in various parts of the world, including in Europe and in the United States. Well, the EU Parliament, in spite of that, approved on Wednesday the comprehensive economic and trade agreement that would eliminate most tariffs for businesses between the EU's economy of about half a billion people and Canada's 35 million. This has met with some backlash. Some of the critics say this only helps wealthy people, large companies. But the other side of the argument is that this trade deal is important. It will eventually create jobs and more wealth for everyone. To give us an analysis on the deal itself, we're very pleased to have joining us a good friend from Catholic University of Korea economics professor Yang Jun-suk. Hello.
Hi.
Hello to you, sir. Thank you so much for joining us. First, this CETA, this is a seven-year period, long, sometimes torturous negotiations. Why was it so difficult? Because we recall with the Canada-Korea FTA, it wasn't as contentious as this, right?
Well, it wasn't as contentious, but it was longer. The negotiations started in July of 2005, and it finished on March of 2014. Now, admittedly, the negotiations started and stopped and started and stopped, because one of Canada's most powerful export items are agricultural goods, and agricultural goods are always very, very sensitive.
Mm.
I think that was probably the major reason why the negotiations took so long. And then there were the usual problems that we hear about in various FTAs, like the ISD, where companies can sue countries when the companies believe that wrongful regulations go against the letter of the FTA caused them losses. And then there was an interesting thing which happened last October, where one of the provinces of Belgium, Valencia, I believe, vetoed the FTA because, the Belgian constitution says that the provinces can veto international agreements signed by Belgium.
Hmm.
So actually, we thought last October that this was it. Canada EU FTA was over. And that was just because of Valencia, a province of 3 million people, which vetoed this entire EU-Canada agreement. But apparently the EU convinced Valencia that their agricultural sector, the dairy sector in particular, would be protected.
This was, as you say, a long, torturous process, 7 years in the making. And when they first started, they, of course, both sides had no premonition that a person like Donald Trump would be elected president of the United States, largely due in part to this very strong anti-trade sentiment brewing. Do you feel that despite the difficulties in reaching a deal, both sides, Canada and the EU, felt that with what they're seeing in the United States, that it might have provided a little bit motivation to try and get this deal through?
I think it provided a lot of initiative, actually. The EU has been very concerned, especially after Brexit, that there was a lot of pressure with the far right within their country, as well as some far left elements. Well, far right wanted independence from EU, far left perhaps not independence, but anti-trade.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most countries, most people in the center believe that keeping EU together and free trade was very important to them. So that provided initiative on the EU side. Canada, because, well, their landmass is very large, but in terms of population, they're not very large at all.
Right.
So they actually are very dependent on trade. So I think that they wanted to show that well, they're part of NAFTA, but U.S. is obviously the biggest part of NAFTA. So they just, they wanted to differentiate themselves from the U.S. in saying that they were pro-trade. So I think having Trump being elected actually gave them a lot more initiative to try to make this thing work.
If you weigh the pros and cons of the deal, and we, obviously there is backlash, there are still some very strong anti-trade forces throughout Europe there. We've seen demonstrations. If you look at the basic, tenets of this deal, would you say it's a fairly fair deal and it does do anything in terms of boosting jobs or productivity?
Yeah, I think it's a positive result for both sides. But it's not that large. According to their own studies, Canada says that they'll probably gain about 12 billion Canadian dollars per year. And the EU says that their studies say that they'll probably gain about 11.6 billion euros per year. Frankly, that's less than 1% of their GDPs. So in that sense, it's not a large gain. But on the other hand, because of the global slowdown, I think every little bit helps. Their study says that bilateral trade between Canada and EU should increase by 20%. And even though it's a relatively small gain, say, example, on the Canadian side, they believe that this $12 billion gain is equivalent to about gaining about $1,000 per household, and it's equivalent to creating about 80,000 jobs.
As we know, when we remember the contentious CORUS FTA negotiations, Professor, it was one thing to come to an agreement and finally kind of wrangle out some of all those pressing issues. But the ratification of that process through the National Assembly was also a very painful affair. If anything, in the EU, it sounds like a much more complicated thing where you have these various regional governments and parliaments that have to approve this once the agreement is made to finally ratified. This is by no means a done deal, right?
Well, it's going to be put in place. The reason that EU process is so complicated is that it first has to be okayed by the European Parliament. Then the treaty goes into effect, but it's not finalized until every country individually approves it. So it took 3 years for the Korea-EU FTA to be completely finalized. And it's going to be same here, but I think it's going to be a smoother process this time because, well, as I mentioned before, the sticking point in October was Valencia, one district in Belgium, and that problem was covered. So I think that shows that pretty much every part of the EU, they may not be completely happy with it, but they're willing to sign on to it. So I think it'll be a bureaucratic process, but I don't think there's going to be that much of a controversy.
Okay. The final question, just with President Donald Trump and his rhetoric, as well as, I suppose, essentially rendering the Trans-Pacific Partnership obsolete, at least from the U.S. perspective. What do you see as the future global landscape for trade and I suppose the future of trade deals?
Okay, well, I think Trump has definitely caused a lot of problems in liberalizing trade. I hope that this will be an opportunity to sort of have the countries re-examine their trade. Because a lot of politicians and a lot of economists believe that the liberalizing trade was so good, there's been a continuous trend toward trying to liberalize the market since about 1970s. And I think that's I think people are sort of burnt out. We kept on saying trade is good, trade is good. But that meant a lot of changes, and people are just sick of changes right now. So I think they've gotten into this illusion that not having trade will be better. I think there's also an aspect that the gains from trade has been somewhat oversold, but still, having more trade is better than having little trade. And I hope that this will give opportunity to people to sort of give a taste of what happens when trade is restricted. And hopefully it'll give more momentum to liberalizing more trade once Trump gets out of the picture.
And that might be sooner than later, I guess, according to some people who are observing the situation there. Professor Yang, as always, thank you very much for joining us. A pleasure to have you.
Thank you.